Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So how has your past week been? I know that's the question that everybody wants to hear the answer to.
We can cut this out if it's too behind the scenes. But sometimes we record a little ahead of time. I guess, you know, we're not really a time-based podcast. You know, there's no extreme breaking news. But I was talking to my friend on the phone yesterday, and I was like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to record the podcast with my friend. Well, I said your name because, you know, we had dinner together when you were here in Austin. It was that couple.
Yep. Yeah.
And she was like, oh, man, like, how many episodes do you guys have? And I was like, man, that's a good question, because I feel like I just record these and I don't think too much like how many we recorded. And I went on and I was like, man, we've got 50 episodes. That's like a lot. And she's like, you have 50 episodes? I don't bring it up to her that much because she just started watching King of the Hill, and we do jump around a lot. So I didn't want to, like, she doesn't want things spoiled for her. So she's going to finish the series and then come back and listen. But man, 50, I don't know what episode we're on now. This will be, I do know what episode we're on. 52. I don't know what time it is, but yeah, 52 episodes. That's this is a lot of episodes. You could listen to this for 2 days straight if you wanted. A little over two days.
That's true. Yeah, that's true, because most of our podcasts are around 55 to 65 minutes, so yeah, if you started and went all the way through, you can go 2 days.
Well, I did suggest to her that if she doesn't want the episode spoiled for her, she could just listen to the first 15 minutes of each podcast and see how our weeks are going, and then save it for later. But, man, gosh, 52 episodes. 52 episodes. Then we've been doing this for a year?
Pretty much, yeah.
Whoa. I don't know why my mind's blown by these things, because we've done them. We're doing them. We're doing it right now. It's just weird to think about it, right? Man, time goes by so fast. My mind is blown right now. It was blown yesterday, and I'm blown away today now thinking about... Wait, this will be our end of the year one. We've only...
Close to.
We missed a couple of weeks, right? I don't know now.
No, there's been some weeks where we've done two episodes because we were traveling or something, and I think we might have missed 1 week because one of us was sick or something like that. Okay. But beyond that, we've done them all.
Wow. Gosh, this is crazy. It's been done, but 52. So this is a year's worth right now. This one is the end of the year one, and it's a good episode too. So, but besides that, I guess that's not what I've been doing for my week, but that's something I was thinking about today. And when you brought it up, I don't know. It's so, a year ago, we were so young and didn't know what life had in store for us. And now we're here.
Exactly.
That was, I don't know. I guess I did more of my week, but you go first, and then maybe I'll find something to talk. I don't want to cut it short. So what did you do this week?
Yeah. So largely just work. I did go and go to the beach this weekend, just kind of hang out, went to Golden Gate Park got some coffee. I'm rarely over at that side of town, so it's kind of nice to go there for a change. So that was nice, the Outer Sunset District. So I did that. I played a lot of Last of Us. So I finished the first one. Now I'm working on the second game. I think I'm about halfway through. So we'll see what happens, how the game ends. But yeah, it's been pretty fun playing it and enjoying the game. I know that it was very controversial when it came out. I think it sounds like the fan base was kind of divided on whether or not it was a good game, but I'm enjoying it. And yeah, this week just kind of doing more of the same. I know this new Scream movie comes out. That's one of my favorite franchises. if not my favorite horror franchise, definitely one of them. I can't think of another horror franchise I like more than that one, so.
I am on the same page with you. It wasn't my first ever horror movie that I saw, but I do remember, gosh, I want to say I was in elementary school. Was I in elementary school? What, Scream 1, the first Scream came out in 1996.
Yeah, probably, because I would have been in elementary school, like the later part of elementary school, maybe fourth or fifth grade, but yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I was in elementary school. I remember my dad renting it, and we watched it at home, and I was scared, and I was fascinated. I love the whodunit of it all. I actually have tickets to go see it this Thursday, or this, because it's coming out this week. I'm going to go see it on Thursday. I actually bought I bought two sets of tickets for two different showings, because I didn't know if my friend can make which one, but I wanted to make sure I have tickets. So I have tickets for a 5 o'clock showing, and I have tickets for a 7 o'clock showing. So I will see it eventually, like one of those. Maybe I can go to both. I think it's only 2 hours long. Jump from one screen to the next.
Yeah, it's 2 hours, 2 minutes, something like that. So
if I see credits, I can watch
them. Yeah, you should be fine.
But yeah, I'm excited for the new Scream. I've been really good to myself. I'm very like, I'm on Reddit, I'm like looking at everything about it, but I heard that someone leaked the ending of the movie on the internet, so I've been like trying to stay away from any spoilers. I want to go in really like fresh. Are you going to see it in 3D? It's the first Scream movie in 3D.
Honestly, I hadn't thought about it, but now that you mention it, it might not be a bad idea to check that out.
Yeah, I definitely am going to see it in 3D. I don't know for the 5 o'clock showings in 3D, the 7 is not. I guess it just depends on what happens that day.
I personally feel like 3D is a gimmick like 90% of the time. So there was a point in time where like any movie I saw, I wanted it to be in 3D. Now, it really just depends on the film. Like Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania with the visuals, that one definitely lends itself well to 3D. But there's just some movies where it's like, meh, take it or leave it.
This is true. I honestly love 3D. I think it's fun like to play around with. I enjoy it. But I feel like the only good 3D movie out there is Avatar and then Avatar 2. Because it was filmed in 3D, like it was made for 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks beautiful in 3D. Everything else, you get to, honestly, a lot of movies that come out on 3D are not filmed in 3D. They're digitally 3D-ified in like post. So, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. You can take it or leave it. It doesn't really, the director didn't want to add anything by making it like 3D. So. But Scream, I'll probably check it out. I might watch in 4DX. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be fun. The only 4D theater we have in San Francisco just announced that it's closing, so I'm like sad. And I don't even think it's been open for like 2 years or less than that. I don't think it's even been open for a full year yet, or if it has, like just barely over a year.
I mean, 4DX is definitely gimmicky, but it's so much. It's just a fun treat for yourself. It's like going on a 2 hour ride for the movie. So we have one here. It sells out though all the time. I wonder if it's because it's only like 24 seats or something like that, 30 seats maybe. That's why it always sells out. But yeah. People love it. They play the Harry Potter movies there. The Marvel movies get there. Ghostbusters, I think, was the last one they played there. But I don't know. Scream, though. I'm excited.
Nice. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. And I think this is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, this one's going to be like the first true spinoff, I guess you could call it. Because it's not supposed to have, Neve Campbell and the others that have been in pretty much every movie so far, right? It's like passing. Like, Scream 5 was meant to be the passing of the torch.
Were you saying Neve Campbell's not in it?
Yeah, Neve Campbell. The original cast isn't in it. So, like, my understanding is Scream 5 was supposed to be kind of the passing of the torch almost. So they introduced a whole new cast. But then they had the old cast and, you know, kind of saying, okay, now we've retired this old cast and we're focusing on this new band of heroes. Mm.
But we have Courtney Cox. She's coming back. So we have Gail Weathers.
I guess. Okay. That's something. I always felt like what's her face, Sidney Prescott was like the centerpiece of all the films.
True. But I'm excited. Did you watch Scream 4? Have you seen Scream 4?
Oh, I've seen, okay, yeah, I've cool. seen all of them, yeah.
So, Kirby's coming back. Kirby's going to be in Scream 6.
Yeah. They purposely left it ambiguous, her death, in Scream 4. And then there's like a almost blink and you miss it notification or cameo. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, within Scream 5, like where they're showing the YouTube videos or whatever. And then in the suggested video column, it's like, it says, like, I forget what it says, but like, Kirby, survivor of the Woodsboro slashing, speaks out or something like that. So,
you know, it's hilarious. Like, I love Scream and I'm a big fan, but I think I saw Scream the, what is it, 2022? Did it come out last year? Yeah.
Yes, Scream 5 came out last
year. So 2022 Scream. I saw it like two times in theaters. And I did not notice that. I mean, people were like sleuthing because I came out of the theater and then it was already on like Reddit and everything. Like, Kirby, like, did you see the Kirby YouTube thing? And I'm like, man, you were zoomed in on that laptop scene. Because there's another thing in there where it talks about, like, could Stu have survived, you know, the original Scream?
Yeah. Yeah, Scream is one of my favorites.
Okay.
So,
which is the best one, though?
That's hard to say.
Can you rank them real quick? It's one of those things where I want to see.
All I know is that 3 is my least favorite. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it's hard for me to rank 1 through... And I haven't seen 6, so I can't say anything, but it's hard for me to rank 1 through 5, except I know for a fact 3 would be my last one.
All right. I have my ranking. I'm gonna list. So it's Scream 1996. Oh, wait. Should I go 1 or down? Should I go up or down?
Yeah, start from the bottom and all go right. up.
Scream 3 is my least favorite. Then we're going to go Scream... This is okay. Scream 3 is the least favorite. Then I'm going to go Scream 2, then Scream 4, then Scream 2022, and then Scream 1996. I think that's my order.
I think I'll agree with that. I think the original's definitely the best. Then, yeah, I think I would pretty much go with what you're saying.
It's tough because Scream 2 is the reason I'm afraid of people sitting behind me in movie theaters. Because of the Jada Pinkett Smith scene.
Mm-hmm.
I always think about that. And like her screaming on the... That's Oscar-worthy performance right there.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with this one.
Oh, man. Yeah, are you going to see it this week? I know now we're just like talking personal stuff, but are you going to be seeing it this week?
I probably will. I don't have tickets yet, but I probably will. I was planning on seeing it. But I have a friend who's in town for like a few days for a conference. So I'm going to go, instead of seeing it, I'm going to go visit him because, you know, it's not like the movie's going to vanish. But, you know, I only have a limited time to see him. But other than that, I'll probably catch it on the weekend.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. This weekend, I'm going to another Power Ranger convention. We have one here in San Antonio. So I'm going to be driving up there to get, I guess... I don't know. I don't feel like I've ever talked about this, but I'm a big Power Ranger fan. I know I talked about that. But I have a Red Ranger helmet from the show. It was made by Bandai, so it's an older helmet. I won it at a prize for a cosplay contest, and all the Red Rangers at that convention signed it for me. So now I've been going around to different conventions. If there's Red Rangers there, I bring it and I get it signed by the Red Rangers. And there's going to be the newest Red Rangers coming to San Antonio this weekend. So I'll be driving up there and adding another signature. That is definitely my, like, do you have that thing where you think about, like, if, God forbid, if my place caught on fire, what things I would grab?
I've honestly never thought about it. Now I'm going to need to.
That helmet is one. It has, right now, I think I'm at 20 signatures on that helmet now. So that helmet and my dog, because I love him to death, but he's not the brightest dog in the world. So he might need help. Like, he needs to be grabbed and escorted out of the burning building. So those are probably my two things.
My dog, definitely, I would say. Beyond that, I don't know. Maybe whatever is easy to get. Like, I'm not, there's nothing here that is that irreplaceable to where it would be like, oh, I absolutely need to get it and I'm going to risk my life for it. So it's like, if it was reachable or whatever, then maybe there's a lot of things I would grab. But beyond that, like, my dog would be the top priority.
Yeah, I don't, man, there's so many. I'm a big collector. I collect a lot of things, but man, in a fire, you really can, like, you can only grab like one or two things, you know, if they're close to you. You know, main priority is get out of the building, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we know what Hank would grab in a fire based on, we don't know what he would grab in the fire based on the last episode, but it'd probably be something important.
What would Bobby grab before we jump into the episode?
Fruit pies.
Oh my gosh, fruit pies. Do you think Peggy would grab the gnome? I mean, we don't see it ever again, but.
No, I mean, if it's outside, she doesn't need to.
No, they brought it in. Kind of already. Remember there. At the end of the episode, the replacement?
Oh, yeah, gnome? That's right. Yeah. Yeah, she would save the gnome.
Yeah. Or, I'll save it. I was going to say something, but that's next week's episode. But let's talk about this week's episode.
Yeah, well, we can jump right into it. Absolutely. Let's jump right into it. So this is episode 52 for us, Lady and Gentrification, season 12, episode 14. And actually, I just realized this, that this episode aired almost exactly to the date 15 years ago, because its original air date was March 9th, 2008. So by the time it comes out, it would have already aired. But at the time of recording this, it's not quite March 9th yet. But yeah, so it is pretty close to being 15 years old, this episode.
Whoa, that's in now, man, you're blowing my mind all, like, everything today. Oh, man, this is a great episode, too, so.
Mm-hmm. And I always talk about how I don't like the later episodes as much, and that largely stands true. But I would say one thing that the later episodes do that I really enjoy is that they do shine the light on some of the minor characters. So there are a lot of episodes, for better or worse, that are centric on some of the other characters that aren't the Hills or Dale or the Gribbles or Boomhauer or anything like that. So, like, this is an episode that's very Enrique heavy. And also, it kind of, for those of us who grew up, well, Jimmy grew up in Austin, so he probably has a very, very different opinion than I am. But, you know, in the 10 years, not 10 years, but the 7 years or whatever I spent in Austin watching that change, the kind of resonates here as well, this episode. But let's jump right in. So the episode starts at Strickland Propane. Hank's kind of chilling in his office doing work. Enrique comes in and he has his daughter Inez with him. And Hank kind of sees them approaching and, you know, Enrique says, ask him. And so Hank realizes that, oh, this is going to be some kind of favor that I'm going to be uncomfortable doing. So he's kind of prepping himself for the bad news or whatever. And Inez asks Hank if he will speak at her quinceañera. Hank doesn't know what that is, but, you know, Enrique explains, oh, you know, it's a 15th birthday party for girls. And, you know, it signifies them going from girlhood to womanhood and yada, yada, yada. And Hank's like, well, you know, I don't really know her. And it's like, oh, it's only a month away. That's plenty of time to get to know her. And Hank's trying to get out of this, but he can't come up with an excuse. So he's like, man, I'm really on the spot here. And Enrique just kind of takes that as an acceptance. So Hank's kind of stuck here. in the alley, Hank's talking to the guys and trying to get like advice on how to handle this. Like, I don't even know who I'm talking to, or because I mean, I've never met her, and Enrique thinks I'm going to be giving the speech, and I don't know what to do. And Bill's like, man, well, you must be honored to be the man of honor on this thing. And Dale's like, you know what a quinceañera is? They sacrifice the oldest woman to the youngest woman, or whatever. And which isn't true at all, but I just love how Dale's mind works. And yeah, Hank's like, he just can't back out, so he's trying to figure out what to do. Peggy is selling homes, and I don't think we've covered this yet. We might have, 52 episodes in. But at some point, and we never did this episode, Peggy switches from being a newspaper reporter to being a real estate agent. And so this is the real estate agent alley of Peggy's life, or the real estate agent's chapter of Peggy's life, rather. She is driving around, and she is driving around a hipster, like stereotypical hipster that you would see, that you would always see, with the scarf around his neck and kind of the wavy hair and all that jazz. And you know, she's trying to show them different houses, and he's just not liking any of them. He's just like, oh, this just isn't it. This is not real. And she's just, what do you mean? I mean, I've shown you all these houses. What do you mean? It doesn't feel authentic. I want a house, but this neighborhood is nowhere. And Peggy's just like, oh, this, she's upset because it's a very vague request he's making, but he's making it. And so now she's kind of stuck.
I love that he's like, I want a house. And she's like, this is a house. And he's like, man, that's like a really tough client. Gosh, I don't know. You don't deal with clients anymore, right?
Oh,
or do you?
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. This always reminds me of, when I was doing wedding cakes a lot, when I say couples, it's always usually the bride. We had one bride, and on her little request thing, she's coming in for a tasting. She was like, I don't like anything vanilla, but I don't like anything chocolate, and I don't really want anything fruit. And I was like, man, she's eliminated a lot. Like, we're running out of things now.
Okay. Yeah, what do you make at that point?
Then
marzipan cake.
Oh, yeah, guys. Dude, you're going to kill me. Yeah, it's marzipan. Oh, man.
I mean, it's not fruit. It's not chocolate. It's a nut flavor. So it's almonds. So there you go.
I still have the marzipan you gifted me for Christmas. It's a challenge to get through that.
That's all right. I'm sure it has a life span of like 20 years or something. Oh, so you can get to it when you get to it.
But yeah, but customers are really tough. Like, especially when they don't know what they want. And you're like, I can only offer so much.
Yeah. And we're not mind readers. Like, way back in the day, I used to build websites when I was in college. And every once in a while, I'd get these just non-descriptive things of what they, can you make it pop more, and can you just make it more, with it, or just these vague terms that don't really mean anything. And I'm like, I'm not a mind reader. I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. I guess it's hard for them to envision, like they envision what they want, but it's hard for them to say. This guy is just mm-hmm. difficult though. The one Peggy's dealing with, he's just like he's difficult.
Mm-hmm. He is. Because he's not saying, he's like, this neighborhood's nowhere. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, what is it that you don't like about the neighborhood? But yeah, I feel bad for her. We head back to the Hill home, and she's like, oh, sorry that the potatoes are instant. So I had a whiny client today. I couldn't come home and cook and yada, yada, yada. And Hank's like, oh, you're still with that guy? Why don't you just pass him off to another realtor? She's like, oh, it's because I already invested so much time into him. It's like when you when you're in Vegas and you've already spent so much money that it only makes sense to continue spending money. Hank's like, well, I'd trade places if you... Yeah. Hank was like, well, I'd trade places if I could. You know, I'm expected to give the speech and I don't speak any Spanish. And I'm sure everybody's going to expect me to speak Spanish. And Peggy volunteers to help because she's like, hey, I used to be a Spanish teacher and I know teenagers. So this is going to be easy. Bobby then kind of has this moment where he's like, why is there nothing for boys like me? You know, Mexican girls get their quinceañera. Jewish boys gets their bar mitzvah at 13. You know, rich girls have sweet 16. There's nothing for Christian boys like me. Then he comes out with the idea of like, hey, I got it. 14's not taken, so I'll call it the sweet 14-0. And, you know, I have to eat 14 hot dogs before sundown or I won't become a man.
Okay. I quote this all the time when, I don't know, anytime we're talking about birthdays with my friends or everything, I'm like, oh, you know, 14-0, it's like the best thing in the world. I can't, like, if I have a kid, and we're definitely going to have a 14-0, you know, 14 hot dogs. But don't you think, is it too easy, 14 hot dogs throughout the day? Do you feel like there needs to be, like, a time limit?
I think it's pretty reasonable. Like, if from sun up to sundown, you have to consume 14 hot dogs, that's pretty reasonable.
Okay. I think you have to find the hot dogs on your own. Like, that's part of the, like, challenge of becoming a man. You know, you must go out and find these 14 hot dogs.
I mean, that would work, but at the same time, it wouldn't be that hard. Like, all right, I'll just go to the grocery store.
I don't know. Well, man, maybe in the reboot, in the is it not? It's not a reboot. What? Oh, now I can't remember what it's called. When they bring back King of the Hill, maybe Bobby will have a son and we'll celebrate a 14-0. That would be such a great deep cut if they did that.
It would. I don't know if that'd be likely though, because you never know. They might get creative and do a 20-year skip or something. Because if they're really going to only do like a 15-year time skip, Bobby would then be about 28. And I really hope he doesn't have a 14-year-old kid at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be insane. No, yeah. No, he wouldn't have a kid by then. Well, a 14-0 is amazing, though. I love it. I tell people about it all the time. My friend's niece is about to have her quinceañera. And I was like, 14-0. So this is another reason I love this episode.
Exactly. So Hank's going to Enrique's neighborhood, which is a very Latin neighborhood, which, you know, in Texas, not that unusual. Peggy's not there. So Hank is just kind of sitting in the car like, where's Peggy? And then he just realizes, oh, I got to go alone. He goes to the backyard and Yolanda is there, who is his wife, Enrique's wife. And so is Inez. And it's like, oh, they're building the sturdy stage for the band. And he's like, yeah, and it's going to be where you speak. And I'm also building a trellis. And it's going to symbolize when she walks through it, she's going to start a girl and walk through it as a woman. Hey, maybe I can make Yolanda go in there backwards. And also, I'm going to have these roses just rain all over her and stuff like that. So he's going all out. He's like, yeah, I definitely spent a lot. Hank and Inez try to connect. And Hank has like a notepad out as if he's taking an interview and he's asking questions like, so tell me about yourself. And Inez is not interested and just kind of looking around. It's like, that's a pretty bird. And Hank just writes down, likes birds. Peggy shows up with the hipster. She's just like, okay, look, I just have to stop here. I have to help my husband connect with a 14-year-old Mexican girl, which sounds weird in of itself. And, you know, then I'll be right back out. So she goes to the backyard. Inez is a little weird. Peggy tries to break the ice, but she mispronounces her Spanish, as expected, where she says your bears are like plates. My understanding, like, granted, I don't think they ever say, but so she says, sus osos son como placas, which I think she tried to say sus ojos son como platas, which is your eyes are like silver. But of course she messed that up. So Inez is confused and Peggy's like, all right, cool. I broke the ice, and she bounces. And then Hank decides to leave too. He's like, oh, I got a good going. And then all of a sudden, Enrique comes out and says, hey, Buck Strickland's going to be at the event, and he really wanted to give the speech, so be sure that you give a great speech. And now this makes Hank even more nervous. Peggy walks outside and realizes the hipster has escaped the car. All of a sudden sees a house that the real estate agent, or the realtor, I guess, had the listing of, and she's like, I'll take it. And apparently, like, this is what he wanted. He wanted something just like Enrique's neighborhood. And it's like, yeah, this is just so authentic and it's so real. No whiteies. Which was funny because the guy himself is a white guy. So that kind of adds to the humor there.
What would... Why does Buck want to make the speech so badly?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, I don't like. I don't know that it just fascinates me. Like, why would Buck? Why does Buck? Though I wonder if it's just like Buck wants to do everything, kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe,
or he's trying to be the life of the party. He's trying to steal the party away.
Maybe that could be it. Like he wants to be the most important or the second most important person in the party.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's like. Oh, it could be a jealousy thing. Now that I think about it, maybe it's a jealousy. Like, I'm your boss. Why are you asking Hank? Hank's only assistant manager.
That's true. That could be it, very much.
And then, of course, you know, it's hearing the hipster say no whiteies is just such a great line.
Yes. At the Hill House, they're all talking about, you know, I guess their day. And Peggy's talking about how the hipster really wants to move into Enrique's neighborhood. And it's like, yeah, he's weird, but his loan is pre-approved and he has rich parents. And he has a lot of starving artist friends who also have rich parents. And, you know, okay, cool young people are good for the neighborhood. And Hank's like, well, it is family oriented, but I mean, I guess if you say so. And then Peggy's like, oh, I cannot help with Inez today. I'm too busy with, I guess the guy's name is DJ Peanut Butter. But, you know, talk to Bobby. He knows 14-year-old girls. It's like, well, there is one in my class, but she was held back because she's a dum-dum. And Peggy's like, just help your father. And Bobby's like, look, there's one thing that girls are obsessed with. The popular girls. Love them or hate them, you get them to talk about the popular girls, they will open up. And so Hank goes over to Enrique again to talk to Inez. And the idea works. He's like, so tell me about the popular girls. And she just goes on about Gabriella and Anna and everything. And once the ice is broken, he starts asking Inez like actual questions about hobbies, and she's opening up and she's like, well, I like soccer and movies. And Hank's like, huh, soccer. So you like sports, kinda. This leads to a montage where we start seeing a bunch of different hipsters move into Enrique's neighborhood, and Hank is hanging out with Inez, but as time progresses, more and more hipsters are taking over. And so like they'll go to the park, but all the hipsters are there doing whatever. And so they can't hang out at the park anymore. They go to a taqueria. And Hank's like, man, this is one of the best fish tacos I've ever had. The hipsters show up. And, you know, there's a lot of actual, you know, it's a very, you know, Mexican taqueria. So there's Mexican music playing. They come up. They switch the CD to, I guess, what this one DJ made. And it was just this weird experimental type sound that you just don't. It's a niche audience. Most people are not going to enjoy it. And Enrique's like, oh, this just makes me feel weird. And Hank's like, don't worry, I'll change the music back. And he goes up to change it. And the hipsters are mad and they start acting. It's weird because they start acting Mexican, I guess you could say, because they're just like, hey, this, what are you doing here, amigo? This is our spot. And then, of course, Enrique shows up. It's like, hey, what's going on? It's like, oh, you know, any friend of my hombre here is a friend of me. And how? Come on. And Hank's like, okay. And Enrique's like, I don't even know these guys.
Yeah, don't they call him gringo?
Yes.
It's oh man. Okay. So as a, I don't know, I feel like I'm a fringe on the hipsterness. I have thick black rimmed glasses. I do play the banjo. You know, I have plaid shirts. So I don't know. I feel like I can relate to the hipster lifestyle. And I feel like these guys are giving us a bad name. You know, I don't think these are regular hipsters. These are like the douchiest. Can we say douchey?
Yeah, go for it. Podcast? Yeah, go for it.
Okay. They're super douchey people. Like, to go up and change the music?
Yeah.
Man. Well, you gotta have... I don't know.
I think that's kind of the joke there a little bit, because these hipsters are very self-important, if you will. Like a lot of people are. Like, I think, and you got to think of the context of the show, the episodes around 2008. So that's kind of when the what they called the yuckies, the young urban people, which was just like the often young 20-somethings, maybe no older than 24. They come from well-to-do families, so they're able to live off of mommy and daddy while they explore their artistic side, if you will. And yeah, they, you know, I think that's what they were kind of playing on, was that, and that, and realistically around this time is when gentrification started to slightly take off in America, different cities. So like, you know, I forget what his name is, Wyatt Cenac. He has a joke about growing up in Brooklyn and, you know, in Jay-Z songs, they talk about this is a place where you could get shot and stuff. Now I go visit Brooklyn and there's Lululemons everywhere and you know, mom in yoga pants walking their kids and their dog and stuff. Like, it's not like, you know, that's gentrification free right there. And what's funny is, as somebody who lived in Austin, and I'm sure you can even tell me more as somebody who grew up in Austin, like East Austin, east of IH-35, you know, due to redlining and all that stuff, used to be a very Latin and black part of Austin. Like, way back in the day, black and Latin people weren't allowed to buy anything west of IH-35. Now they can, or at least from a legal perspective. But now, you know, because of that, there's like a lot of history, and, you know, you can get, there's a lot of good Mexican food over in the east side and stuff like that. However, in like late 2010s or late 2000s, early 2010s, all of a sudden, like, all these hipsters started moving into East Austin because it was cheaper at the time. Like, it was dirt cheap compared to the rest of Austin. Not anymore, because it's been super gentrified. And then, you know, as they move in, they bring in their galleries and then their artisan coffee shops and all that stuff, which brings in more hipsters. And then all of a sudden, houses are being bulldozed in favor of large apartments. And these shotgun houses that, like, I remember, was a year or two ago, I was looking at the, my friend and I were looking at the real estate listings in Austin, and there was like this shotgun house, you know, the land, I guess, was mediocre. The house looked run down. It was listed for $1 million. And we're like, if you went back in time to like 1990 and told the family that was living in there that in 30 years, this house is going to be worth $1 million, they would have probably laughed at you.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane how, I mean, it's not insane, but it's eye-opening seeing how things have changed so much. Like, especially, like, I grew up here, so, in Austin, seeing, like, houses converted into restaurants and bars now, and, I'm like, man, everything's changing. It's becoming more fancy, and I don't know, like, I mean, yeah, it's enjoyable, but there's a downside to this too. I mean, we're going to find out in this episode.
Yeah. And it is a bit, and, you know, it does reflect some real world problems, but yeah. So we see Peggy and she's still, you know, showing all the hipsters around, and she wanted to help show this lady, an you know, place for her gallery. And it's like, oh, you know, any of these houses in this neighborhood could be going to the loft. Like, this Mexican neighborhood is like the most popular place for the hipsters at this point in time. in the alley, Hank's talking to the guys. It's like, man, you know, Enrique's neighborhood's changed a lot with all these artists coming in, and you know, they're all skinny and they walk slowly. And Dale's like, what you're talking about are called hipsters. They walk slowly because they have no place to be. And it, Hank's like, well, Inez and I don't like them. Things are changing fast. And, you know, this is a very important time in a girl's life. And Bill's like, oh, that's a great thing. You should put in a speech. And Hank's like, yeah, I think I should. All of a sudden, Enrique shows up and he has one of the fish tacos. And he's like, they put salmon in the fish tacos. Salmon! You know, you got to talk to Peggy. Peggy, tell her to sell houses somewhere else. And, you know, Hank's like, well, Peggy says it's good for the neighborhood. I'll talk to Peggy. You go ahead and focus on, you know, making sure the quinceañera is all set up. So now we're at the house and they're preparing to go to the quinceañera. And while they're doing that, Peggy's texting on, I guess, a BlackBerry. Because I don't think I have not seen a smartphone with a built-in keyboard in a long time. So I'm going to go with that. And she's like, hey, texting's the new talking. And, you know, I've been flipping Little Mexico. And, you know, Hank's like, yeah, I want to talk to you about that. They're really changing the neighborhood. And Enrique and them, they're not really liking that. And it's like, oh, this is good for the neighborhood, though. And this is the new hotspot in Ireland. And, you know, I can sell all this. And it's like, and, you know, or excuse me. She's like, yeah, this is the new hotspot of Ireland. And you know what? If he doesn't like it, he can sell the house, and because of the property values increasing in this area, he can make a ton of money. And Hank's like, yeah, I guess you're all right. In the neighborhood, they couldn't even park near the house because DJ Donkey Oats, I believe is what he was called, is throwing a party. And Hank's like, is everyone a DJ around here? At Inez's party, Hank is getting a speech ready. He sees Inez and talking about Anna and Gabriella coming by. And Hank's actually really invested in this, which is pretty funny. Enrique does like the opening for the event. And he talks about like, oh, how 1 month ago, you know, Hank came to meet my daughter to prepare for this. And he brought his wife, Peggy. And Peggy really changed the neighborhood. She changed it so much that our rent went up. And I can't afford to live here anymore. So we have to move. I don't want to move, Hank. And he just starts crying and ruins the quinceañera, but Bill still encourages him to do the speech. Obviously, he doesn't, but yeah. So that's the downside. And that's actually a real-life problem that happens with gentrification is that, you know, you'll have these people who've lived in this neighborhood for a long time who can no longer afford to live there because a lot of them tend to be renters. And so if their rents go up, they can't afford to live there. Or, you know, in like states like Texas or whatever that does property tax based on not purchase price, but the appraised value. You know, if your $100,000 home is now worth $500,000 and you're paying taxes on a $500,000 home, you probably can't afford that. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the system is rigged.
It is in a lot of ways. I mean, I've always been on the fence with gentrification. On one hand, it's like progress. The neighborhoods are changing. People are moving here. They're for lack of a better term, cleaning it up. I don't want to say that because it makes it like I'm hesitant to say that because it makes it sound like, oh, they're getting rid of the minorities or whatnot, which is not it. But there are a lot of times they are improving the facade, like the buildings tend to be run down on a lot of these neighborhoods. So they do tend to improve the overall facade of the neighborhood. So there's that kind of thing. But on the flip side, it pushes people out of the city who already couldn't afford it. And then when you think of it from like a historical perspective, it's like, all these decades ago when redlining was a thing and whatever, and blockbusting, they would say, okay, you're only allowed to buy stuff in this part of town. You know, black people, Mexicans, whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, 50 years later, 60 years later, whatever, they're like, you know what? We want to live on this side of town too. You guys can just leave.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I feel the same way. Like, I don't like to use the term, like, they're making it nicer, cleaning it up or whatnot. But, you know, it's cool. I like seeing kind of the innovation of it all. But I mean, I wish there was a way we could like figure it out all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a way to, like, I don't know. I feel like these are problems bigger than me, but, well, maybe they're not. You know, some I don't know, not to get all weird, like, but, you know, sometimes you think a problem's bigger than you, but then you're like, but maybe I'm supposed to be doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I feel like this episode really opened my eyes because I really never noticed it at the time that this aired because I guess I was younger. Now as an adult, you know, going driving and actually going downtown and going to the other side, it's just like, huh, things have changed a lot. And it makes me feel like, where did these people go? I don't know. Sometimes I worry about all that with, I have family who lives in Taylor. I mean, they all own their houses, so, you know, that's good. But, you know, all these small towns in Texas are kind of booming up with everyone moving here now. So things are changing. So I feel Enrique in this moment. I can relate to him. Though, I mean, he probably picked the worst timing to reveal that news.
Yeah. That was not the time to do it. He kind of ruined his own daughter's quinceañera. He should have, you know, done it in private and talked to Hank about it or something. But, you know, he didn't. That's what happened. And back at the Hill House, you know, they even point out, yeah, this quinceañera was a disaster. And Hank's kind of confused that Enrique doesn't even own his home. Like, who rents a house for 20 years? I'm pretty sure Inez's room is an addition, which is kind of a good point. And I would kind of think the same thing too. If you live in the same house for 20 years, why don't you buy it? But at the same time, I understand that, like, not everybody can come up with the down payment and all that jazz. So, you know, it is a very weird game. But, you know, Peggy's like, but, you know, you have to admit the neighborhood is getting nicer. Then Peggy's realizes, like, oh no, you know what? I abused my power. I was the cool real estate agent, and that's why all the hipsters like me, and I sold irresponsibly. This is all my fault. And Hank agrees with her. Back at Strickland Propane, we see Enrique. He has a bunch of scratch-offs, and he's like trying to, like, oh, hopefully I'll make a million this time. Oh no, a pineapple. Hank's like, well, Peggy feels bad about what happened, but why don't you own your house? You make plenty of money. And Enrique's like, I live for today. I spend money on parties and funerals, and no one wants to move. Inez can't go to a new school. What do I do, Hank? So at the Hill House, they're like brainstorming a way to address this. And Peggy thinks about some ideas, and she comes up with the idea for redlining. Or not really. Okay, so Peggy brainstorms, and she's like, ah, so back in the day, they used to use this technique called redlining to keep blacks out of certain neighborhoods. And then Hank kind of gives her a look, and it's like, no, that was definitely a bad idea, but maybe we can use the concept against hipsters. And then Bobby's like, no, I just need to think like a hipster. Like, what do hipsters like? Cool things. Let's create something called Cool Town for them to live in. There'll be music playing everywhere and convertibles. And then Hank's like, ugh, sounds like Austin. And then Peggy's like, you have the right idea, but the wrong implementation. It's for hipsters, it's not about where they want to be. It's about where they don't want to be. So they crack a plan. In the neighborhood, we see that Dale goes to visit one of the hipster neighbors and says, hey, I'm your new neighbor. And hipster is like turned off by this. And all of a sudden you look around the neighborhood and there's a bunch of different people, families that have now moved in, white families. So you see like Luann and Lucky, and then you see Bill, and he's like, oh, hi, neighbor. And you see all these other people, like just exactly what the hipsters don't want. This whole family-oriented white neighborhood, the quote-unquote inauthentic experience. So as a result, the hipsters move, and Enrique buys his house. And he's like, oh, I'm going to have a big housewarming party. And Hank's like, yeah, you should probably lay low for a while. We need to keep pretending that we live in this neighborhood until all the hipsters leave. And he's like, okay, well, when all is done, we will have, we won't have a house party. We'll have a house inferno or whatever. And it's like, well, let's have a celebratory beer. And so Hank and Enrique drink, and Inez is there. So Hank decides to give his quinceañera speech to Inez. And that is how the episode ends.
So all these hipsters bought houses and now they got to sell their houses?
Yeah, that's one of the things that doesn't make sense to me in this episode is that, one, the episode establishes that it is a month period. Now, granted, I know it's a TV show. You have to like suspend your disbelief or whatever. But I've actually purchased a house and it takes like a month just to get like all the paperwork and stuff done and whatnot. And so, like, even if you already have a pre-approved loan and all that jazz. So the idea that all these hipsters were able to move in and be fully established in a month just to turn around and say no, like, is ridiculous. Now, granted, I also know it's a cartoon, it's a TV show, you need to suspend your disbelief, but there's just that part of me as, like, a homeowner that's like, how did they do that?
Okay, I always thought that these weren't just, like, regular hipsters, but, like, trust fund baby hipsters. Like, they just had a lot of money. Because they're all DJs, right? I mean, we can't all be DJs.
True.
So, I just figure they're just like... I mean, the smart idea would be to rent those houses out.
Maybe that's what they did.
But then I guess we're still in the same problem.
Yeah, they would still have the same problem at the end of the day. I don't know. Maybe they did rent them out. Because you can't turn around and sell that quickly. Now, granted, I also, like I said, it's a cartoon. I think I'm overthinking this. But still.
Yeah, I mean, but, okay. So, let's talk about, what is it called? Coolsville or Cooltown?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I do feel like, at first I was like, no, this is like Dallas for sure. But no, honestly, when I heard you saying it, I was like, yeah, that's Austin. Like, yeah. We do attract a lot of hipsters here, but you know what? I mean, we're taking one for the team. We're keeping them out of your area. It's us. I probably feel like San Francisco has a lot of hipsters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's that. Portland, you know? We're these hub cities, and we're like, what are they? Like the little things that attract mosquitoes, that little lamp thing?
Yeah.
We're attracting them to us so that, you know... you will be safe.
What was it? Family Guy a few years ago had an episode where they made fun of like the millennial hipster thing. And they're tired about like, oh, what's a millennial? Well, and it's like one of those informative videos. And it's like, what's a millennial? Well, that could be defined as anyone born between 1982 and 2000. Or anyone who thinks loving sriracha or Austin, Texas counts as a personality. Which is kind of true, because you look at a lot of the, especially young people. Now, once you hit your 30s, one thing I've noticed is like a lot of the Austin crowd starts to leave. But when you're in your 20s, especially like in those 2010 period, like when I moved to Austin, that was like when everybody was like, oh, this is like the hip city to be. I'm an Austinite. Oh, look, I'm so cool.
Yeah, I mean, it was like that badge of honor. Like, I'm from Austin, you know. When you travel, you're like, I'm from Austin, you know, that city right there in the middle.
Yeah, I'm cool.
And people are like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, man, I know Sixth Street. You're like, oh, I heard that band play before they became big.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. Like, man, you weren't out South by Southwest last year.
What's funny is I was actually talking to somebody about Austin this past weekend who's never been. Who's lived like their whole life on the West Coast. And I was talking to them a little bit about Austin. I was like, honestly, maybe it's just because I'm older, maybe because I'm jaded since I lived there for a while. I'm like, honestly, Austin's pretty overrated. Like, you know, if you go to if you go to New York City,
how dare you?
Exactly. So if somebody goes to New York City, like, hey, I'm gonna go to New York City. Where should I go? Oh, there, go to the Met. Go to Rockefeller Center, go to the MoMA, go to Central Park. They're going to just list all this stuff. Oh, I'm going to go to San Francisco. Where'd I go? I'll go check out Golden Gate Bridge, Ghirardelli Square, yada, yada, yada. I feel like anytime somebody's like, oh, I'm going to go to Austin, what should I do? And it's not South by Southwest or ACL. You pretty much just list a bunch of restaurants for them to check out.
Oh my gosh. Dang it. I wish I had that list with me right now. My friend, his friend's having his bachelor party, and they picked Austin as a city to have their bachelor party in. None of them are from here. And his friend texted him a list of like the Austin highlights. Like, these are the things. And one of the things on the list was like, go check out the bats. We have that bridge, mm-hmm. the 360 where all the bats fly out. I mean, if you like that. The other one is like, we do have like a, it's like a nudist area. There's like a nudist river.
Hippie Hollow, yeah.
Yeah. So that was on the list. Honestly, though, kind of when I think about what that, I mean, honestly, what you said was so true. When people come to visit or they're like here for the first time, I'm just like, I'm just going to take you to like a lot of food places. Uh-huh. You know, you're going to eat a lot. There's not really like, I don't know. We don't have any like famous museums, like something like crazy like that. I mean, I don't know. Everything's kind of, I guess like you hit Sixth Street up. You do Sixth Street.
Mm-hmm.
Rainy Street, maybe. It's kind of, I don't know. I actually don't drink a lot. So when I go to other town cities, I don't really go out and party.
Mm-hmm.
Or like go to the like the main street or whatever their version of Sixth Street is. But are there other cities out there that like have the houses converted into bars?
I'm sure of it.
Like Rainy Street?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Because I only know of Rainy Street and like, sometimes it fascinates people. They're like, oh my, well, actually I've never heard of, anytime I've taken anyone there, no one's been like, oh yeah, we have something similar to this. So it's, so far I have none, don't, like no one's known of it, but yeah, Rainy Street is just like, it was a normal neighborhood and then they bought someone, like people bought all the houses and converted them into bars for our listeners. And they're just kind of house bars now. So other than that, I don't know what I would like. Yeah, but then again, I'm a foodie, so that's probably...
Yeah, same here. Like, I'm a foodie, so that kind of informs my decisions. But at the same time, whenever somebody would visit, 90% of what we did would be eating. Then there's, like, okay, maybe some local random stuff that we do. Like, oh, let's go, you know, take a picture over at the 360 Bridge, or let me show you Zilker Park or whatever. But, you know, it's almost as if you're just kind of filling in the space between eating.
Yeah, it is kind of like, yeah, it do be like that, where it's just like, okay, we're just kind of waiting until dinner comes around. So, you know, maybe we can watch a movie. Do you guys have movies where you're from?
Yeah, we just finished eating lunch. So let's kill 4 hours for dinner. Oh, let's go check out Zilker Park and the river.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's not too much. Yeah, we're boring. You know what? Austin is good for a day. You come for a day and you've done it. And then you can head back to your home and be like, I'm an honorary Austinite.
I honestly think it's great for people in their 20s. I just think you outgrow it eventually. Like, the novelty runs out at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I love it here. But I live in a suburb area. So, you know, I get to get away from it all. And I like the peacefulness. I'm a big HEB fan, so I can't live without my HEB.
I will say,
it's really tough for me out there.
I will say that is the one thing. Like, I like living in California more than Texas, but one thing that I absolutely miss is HEB.
Yeah, HEB is like, no offense to like Ralph's or Kroger's, but HEB is just like, it's a better version of those things. Maybe that's the thing. Come to Texas, come to some HEBs. Walk around the HEBs, and then you'll understand.
Yeah, I think you actually have to be around an HEB to understand like why they're so great. And I brought my friend to Texas, I can't even remember when, it was like 2 years ago or something like that, and she had never stepped foot in Texas a day before. And that was like, one of the tourist attractions I had to show her, was like, oh, you got to see HEB, like, yeah, I know you have grocery stores where you're from, and we have grocery stores back in San Francisco, but you haven't seen anything till you've seen an HEB.
Oh, yeah. HEBs are... It's a ton of groceries. You know, it's like a lot of groceries. Another thing I really love... Man, now I'm like... You know what? It's more food, I guess. but Round Rock Donut's really good. I always make people eat Round Rock Donut.
Yep.
I know that they're not just Texas, but I definitely love a Buc-ee's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are absolutely things that I miss about Texas that I'm having. Actually, so for my trip that's coming up soon, two of the people, actually, yeah, no, three of the people who are joining are coming from Texas, and I'm having them bring my friend a bunch of like Texas stuff from Buc-ee's.
Oh yeah, Beaver Nuggets.
Yeah, I bought, like, last time she was here, I bought went to Buc-ee's and we bought a bunch of and for those of you who aren't Texan, Buc-ee's is like a gas station on steroids. Like it sells pretty much everything you could think of, and it is amazing. You can get, like, they have a lot of food items as well. They have like the cleanest bathrooms you'll ever see. They have a lot of drinks. Then they have like those little soda things where you can kind of like mix and match your own drinks and or kind of make a rainbow or whatever you want to call it. And then they also sell like all these different forms of beef jerky with different flavors and stuff. So that's what my friend likes. So it's like, yeah, get a bunch of that and bring it on the flight with you for her. So he was like, okay, cool. So
yeah, very nice. Yeah, Buc-ee's is I don't walk out of there without spending like $50. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know how we got off of talking about King of the Hill going to Buc-ee's, but yeah, it was a good conversation. But yeah, on the episode, I like the episode. I like the fact that we're focusing on somebody different this time, like somebody outside of the regular cast. It's very focused on Enrique. I'm glad that they came up with a solution, even though logistically it makes no sense to me in the real world. But I also understand this is a cartoon and I need to suspend my disbelief. Overall, yeah, it was a pretty good episode. And I think it was like making it in a lot of ways. I think it was making fun of Austin and just gentrification in general as a concept.
Very true. Very true. And I love seeing this side of Enrique. Like, we didn't cover it, but the first time you meet him, he's very sad.
Yeah.
So it's fun seeing him like the more party guy. So I love that. Yeah, this is and you know, I like Peggy thinking about the power she has. I love it when she's like, I abuse my power.
Yeah, she thinks she's more powerful than she, I mean, I guess, yeah, she did pull it off and kind of changed everything or got more people involved and moving in and all that stuff. But yeah, she's definitely like, oh my gosh, I abused my powers.
I mean, she got lucky. Is, I guess, what it is.
That's true, because it wasn't even... It was just dumb luck that she happened to pull into the Little Mexico and the hipster happened to like it. So it wasn't like she was good at reading them and all of a sudden discovered it. It just... She stumbled upon it.
This is definitely... I say it every episode, but this is definitely one of my favorite episodes.
Yes, indeed. I agree. And it's sad, because we only have... Well... Technically, we have... So, we're only reviewing two episodes after this one. Peggy the Boggle Champ and To Sirloin with Love. And then we will have one more episode after that where we just kind of wrap things up. So, three episodes left. And we want to thank you all for being with us this long. Join us next week as we do Peggy the Boggle Champ. Until then, I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.